All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Friday, May 12th. I'm Doug Norrie, that is.
James Davis.
And we're from Daily Fantasy Sports Rankings, or DFSR.com, if you don't like to type in as many letters. You can always head over to the site, DFSR.com/MLB, to grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system, powered by Lineup Lab, optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings MLB. NBA, well, there's still a few games left, and then football, when the time comes, all wrapped under one membership blanket. You're all set to go, DFSR.com/MLB. Buddy, explain to the world what it's like to do all the work and raise all the kids in your family.
Well, you joke. We all chip in a lot of things here at the family. Love you, honey, if you're out there right now. But yes, I'm home right now with my two kids, two of my three kids. I'm up to three now, and still working and still bringing home the bacon. So if you're listening out there, ladies, you didn't wind up with me. So sorry about that. Eat your heart out. Go home to your dad of a husband instead.
You are an absolute hero. We have a Friday. We have a pretty big Friday in baseball, and we have all games going off at 7 o'clock. Every team playing. That's how it usually rolls here on Fridays. Baseball is at least consistent in that respect, even if it can be maddeningly inconsistent in just about every other kind of phase of the game. So, a lot to talk about. We can start off with some pitchers. I think the first thing, probably the biggest question people are going to wrestle with tonight, and I'm actually not even sure how much they're going to wrestle with it, but the FanDuel especially has taken Clayton Kershaw and priced him at 9,800 over there going in Coors. Now, last time he played in Coors earlier in the season, he was 10-4. So he's taken a $600 dip down. It's Kershaw, it's Coors. It's one of those, you know, immovable objects meets, you know, well, unstoppable force.
I think you got home.
Yes. Yeah. I feel like 50% of the time I'm wrong every time about things like that. But give me your thoughts here. At what point do... There's a price at which you can play anybody anywhere, right? So, like, so people that's nothing new, right? Like, if Kershaw was a dollar, you would play him on the moon. It wouldn't really matter. But what are we at that point here on FanDuel at 9,800? Is it just cheap enough that you can throw away the fact that obviously the implied runs are going to be higher than any other normal Kershaw start? And does he just become, I guess, not a must play, but I mean the clear play over at FanDuel?
I mean, probably. The thing about Kershaw pitching in Coors today, though, so yes, I think the answer is yes, you're going to play the guy, but it's not actually the slam dunk it appears to be at first glance. Among stadiums that Kershaw has at least five starts in, Coors, he has the highest ERA in Coors by about 0.9 ERA, and the peripherals aren't great either, like 110 Ks to 34 walks, giving up 16 homers in 109 innings. Like, he's not been great in the 18 starts he's had in Coors over the course of his career. The issue is that he's just Kershaw, man, and like he does rely on a little bit of movement for his pitches, but by and large, him just showing up, just being himself, controlling the fastball, you know, staying around the zone, continuing to get the K here and there at under 10,000, I think he's just almost, you could almost just pay $10,000 for his durability alone here, and that the rest of the package is almost just gravy on top. So yeah, I think you play Kershaw tonight. I think you temper your expectations. Like, I wouldn't look at this. Like, I would rather play Kershaw in Petco at 12,000 than in Coors at 9,800, but I still think he's a good value.
Yeah, that's a good comparison, actually, about where, you know, what you'd rather do. And I tend to agree with you here. The Kershaw's numbers this year, a little bit down from last year. The Ks are under 10 per nine. That's about a half a K per nine less than he was dealing last year, and then significantly less than he was dealing 2 years ago in 2015. Walks up a little bit over last year. XFIP up a little bit. All the numbers are just kind of in the wrong direction as compared to last year, and as compared to like his last three seasons, which were his total just completely lights out season. So that's a little concerning, I think. I'm not sure if I'm going to make a huge deal about it. There hasn't been a crazy just change in any like singular thing he's doing. He is throwing the fastball a little bit less and the slider a little bit more this year. That could be sample size. I'm not totally sure. So I think that FanDuel has basically dared you to do it. At 98, I probably will accept the dare. If you look at lineups right now, especially on FanDuel with him, he's in 100% of calculated lineups on our site right now. And if you take him out, you lose about 3 points in expectation off your overall lineup. So that's a pretty far way to fall. I mean, according to our system, in terms of, you know, whether or not you should play a guy, he's helped in this case by there not being, you know, there's no other huge guy going. Like, there's no Scherzer going here. There's no, well, Syndergaard's hurt, but there's, you know, Chris Sale. If another guy like that existed that could get close to his raw points, then I think that it'd be more of a question, but that isn't really the case here. So FanDuel, I think it's pretty much lock and load, and kind of hope that you get away relatively unscathed. DraftKings, it's a little closer. They did not take the price as far down. He's still over 10 there, so it's a little closer. Probably still end up with him, but maybe not totally 100%. After him, you know, in terms of, like, let's say DraftKings starting pitcher two, or you are on a fade. And believe me, I think it's completely reasonable to fade him in cash on FanDuel. But after him, where else can we look for starting pitching?
Yeah, so my eye tonight goes in two different directions. So the first one we'll talk about is for cash games. And, you know, I'll start this by saying I'm probably not going to go away from Kershaw for cash game purposes. But if you wanted to go for a guy in a little bit better of a park, certainly, you could look at Johnny Cueto. Cueto this season, you know, kind of back to his old tricks, almost identical peripherals to last season, with the one exception being that he's just given up one extra home run per nine. But everything else fairly similar. I mean, Ks are a little bit up. The walks are a little bit up. The XFIP is a little bit up as well, mostly on the back of an increased fly ball rate. But overall, he's been the solid, steady pitcher you've come to know and maybe like a little bit. He's someone that's kind of hard to get super excited about from night to night. But, you know, over the course of the last few seasons, what he is a huge innings eater. So he'll go out there this season again, averaging about 6.5 innings per start. That might not sound like a lot to people, but it actually is quite a bit. You know, when we actually normalize these things out over the course of a whole season, there really aren't that many pitchers that put up those sorts of innings numbers, as evidenced by him topping 212 in each of the last three seasons. Now, the problem with Cueto actually is just the team he's up against. So a lot of people will see the Reds here and see that they're heading off on the road and figure, oh, well, hey, it's the Reds going on the road. They're going from their own amazing home ballpark at San Francisco, where things are a lot tougher to put together. It's a lot harder to score runs. And while that's the case, the Reds this season have been the team with the third highest WOBA in the league against opposing pitching when they're on the road. So going away just hasn't hurt them that much. That's probably a little bit because they're less reliant on guys like Jay Bruce, you know, kind of these high upside but low downside kind of guys, and just are a little bit steadier through the lineup this year. But yeah, the Reds are not a cupcake matchup whatsoever. Even with the decent matchup against Scott Feldman here, Cueto isn't super heavily favored. The Giants right now coming in at just a minus 140. So yeah, I guess I'm okay on Cueto. He's a guy I would kind of grudgingly play if there were no such thing as Kershaw tonight, but he probably falls just a little bit short.
Well, most of all the run lines after Kershaw are in that range. Like, anyone that you'd really consider, there's probably one or two other guys that have money lines up over 150, but most of them are pretty much falling in this kind of like minus 130, minus 140 range. I don't mind Cueto. I agree with you. It's hard to get excited about them. It's kind of hard to get excited about the Reds too, because they're just kind of a list of guys, like, after, except for Votto, clearly
a list of guys that have just put up an 810 OPS on the road.
I know, seemed like the sum of the parts, like, is more than the whole, I guess. It's weird because you look down that lineup and clearly Votto is, you know, is excellent. Hamilton's is awful, like, in terms of just, like, straight up leadoff hitter. I guess
probably the worst leadoff hitter in the majors. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. Just in terms of getting on base and, like, the exact things you don't want out of a leadoff hitter. And then guys like Cozart, Suarez. I mean, Adam Duvall. My hate affair with Adam Duvall is long and storied. So I just can't, like, he's a guy that seems like he's like four swings away from just being back in the minors. Like, just seems to get really lucky with home runs. So yeah, I'm with you on Cueto. I'd be hard pressed to play him over Kershaw at all. But all the points you make are right there. Who else after him?
Yeah, so I think after him, like, again, kind of allowing for the fact that on FanDuel you're probably just going to focus in on Kershaw. But if you want to look at some guys for big tournaments, there's one guy I'm keying in on here is Lance McCullers. McCullers back over double digits K per nine this season, and that's actually nothing new for him. I mean, in 2015, he only had 9.24 Ks per nine, but every other stop along the way, aside from a four-start stretch in rookie ball, he's topped double digits Ks per nine, and that's always been kind of the case with him. He's been this sort of electric upside guy ever since he was taken, I think, 10th overall. Yeah, when he came up, he's just got this stuff that it's almost unhittable. The problem is he's kind of doesn't know where it's going either. Last year he had 12 Ks per nine, but also 5 walks per nine, which is just completely astronomical, and, you know, made it really, really hard for him to get through the fifth inning. This year he's kind of tempered that down a little bit. He has shaved 1 K per nine, but he's also down to only 2.7 walks per nine. And if that's a sustainable change for him, and it very well might be, by the way, he is young. He's 23 years old. Then we're looking at a guy who's probably a little bit underpriced relative to where he could produce. Now, the issue, of course, is the Yankees. You know, if McCullers were facing anybody besides the Yankees, basically, he would be a very attractive option tonight for all purposes. The Yankees, unfortunately, just have crushed right-handed pitching this season. Second in the majors in terms of WOBA against righties. Obviously, it's a pretty unforgiving park that they'll be playing in tonight. So, yeah, McCullers, I think the upside is there. The Yankees can strike out. You know, there are a number of kind of guys who that would fall in that boomer bust category in the same way the Reds used to. But yeah, you're probably not going to want to go in this direction for your cash games.
Yeah, McCullers is, in looking through some of his pitch FX stuff quickly about like what changes he may have made this season, he's actually throwing the fastball a little bit less and his changeup way more. So if he's just identified that as a pitch to get one, players, batters to swing outside of the zone, or just two, to like mix up, maybe just become more of a fastball changeup guy rather than throwing the knuckle curve as much as he was throwing last year, then maybe it is sustainable. This is what we always look for. Like, did the guy make like some kind of change, right? Like, is there something that we can point to that there's some kind of just change in his profile? McCullers does fit that category, and that's awesome for a young guy too, right? If you can identify it early and cut down on your primary issue, which was the walks over the last year, then he just ends up becoming like an elite pitcher, basically, which is what they wanted him to be. And if you just figured out like, if he's figured out the one major problem, then I really like him. The short porch and right is scary here for the Yankees. So that's the thing where you can kind of get blown up pretty quickly in a game.
You can. I mean, McCullers, the other thing about him is he actually is an elite ground ball guy too. And I mean, you called it exactly right. He's got true like Chris Sale probably level upside here. The 58% ground ball rate this season, also nothing new for him. 57.3% last year. And, you know, getting rid of the knuckle curve or pitching it less, is that only going to increase that number, since curveballs in general tend to lead to more fly balls? But I think McCullers, he's got a huge future ahead of him. And, you know, actually, if he does get blown up in this start and the price goes down even further, you're going to really want to key on him for his next start. So pay close attention to him tonight and kind of see where that goes, because there's potentially a lot of value waiting around the corner here.
Another guy who falls into the big money line category is Rick Porcello. He's a -165 tonight, which I believe is the second highest money line. Tanner Roark has one at -170. But Porcello's a guy, he's another one who's seen an uptick in strikeouts this year. He was kind of, for his career, he was never really a strikeout guy, especially when he was with the Tigers. Made the moves to the Red Sox and saw the strikeouts go up a little bit, like, you know, from around a 6 career K per 9, and up last year, over the last 2 years, up to around 7.5, 7.8, something like that. And now he's jumped this year to over 9. So I can see people talking themselves into him. I do think the strikeout numbers are probably sustainable for him going forward. Only because it's been a move in the right direction since leaving Detroit. So the other thing you look for is, like, you know, team change. And when a guy changes teams, there's just a good chance it's some other pitching coach and some other group of analytics got their hands on a guy and said, let's just start doing something differently. Porcello does kind of strike me as that kind of guy. He's throwing the fastball a lot more this year and kind of limiting the two-seamer and throwing the fastball more, and then throwing a curveball more than he's ever thrown in the rest of his career. So the rest of his career, he'd been around 10% of the time curveball. He's up to 20%. So another guy who may have just identified another pitch in his repertoire and is using it to, like, with all those things in mind, like going that kind of jump in K rate over a K per inning, do you see this like sustainable for him?
Yeah, I mean, you touched on a number of important factors here. I think the reduction in the two-seamer is actually really nice here, because, you know, if you're not a pitching coach, if you're listening to us right now, if you are, by the way, sorry, we're probably going to butcher something here or there, but if you're not a pitching coach, we'll pretend to be one for a second, and go ahead and say that the two-seamer, you know, that the result that the two-seamer is most highly correlated with is the ground ball.
Yep.
And as you've looked at Porcello's career trajectory, you know, coming up with the Tigers, I feel like them trying to build him out in kind of the Brandon Webb style mode, going from a 54% ground ball rate in his first season with them, you know, down to 46% with the Red Sox in his first season with the Sox, down to 39% ground ball rate this season. You know, the more you're inducing ground balls with your two-seamer, the less you're striking guys out. And that's going to cause a number of effects, like a higher BABIP. It can cause, you know, just a number of untold unintended consequences. And so the thing we've always known is that the pitcher has most control if he just doesn't allow the batter to put the ball into play. And so, yeah, Porcello is moved a little bit more in the wildness direction, like he's walking a few more guys, but that's coming with an increased number of Ks and a reduction in ground balls as well. And while generally we like ground balls, they tend to be better than fly balls for a lot of reasons, what we really want to find is just that pitcher's sweet spot where, you know, the whole package sort of comes together, because frankly, most pitchers in the majors probably could generate a lot more ground balls at the sacrifice of their K rate, but they choose not to because a ground ball is worse than a strikeout. So all that put together, I don't know that we're going to see him end the season at a 9.4 K per nine. That would be a pretty significant jump for a guy in his age 28 season, but I could see him settling in at like 8.5 or something like that. And that would still probably make him a value on where you're paying for him right now.
Yeah, the Rays are a team that will K up and down that lineup, so you're not so worried about that. I mean, they have a little bit of power, but not tons. You know, pitching in Fenway.
And some really heavy platoon guys. Like, it's really nice to have Longoria there, who's just been tremendously better against lefties over the course of his career, as opposed to, you know, one of these more platoon neutral star types.
And the thing with pitching in Fenway for him, especially with lefty batters, is left, you can get away with a lot. It's hard to get one out in Fenway when you're a lefty hitter. So I mean, you know, obviously the Green Monster is one thing, but if you're going to face primarily lefty bats, then you can just, you don't need to be that heavy ground ball guy, right? Like, you can just allow the fly ball, because it's going to most of the time get eaten up into that, because they just have those huge alleys after you get past the pesky pole. So now, I like Porcello here. I could see a scenario putting him and Kershaw together and paying a little bit extra.
I like that on DraftKings.
I think you have a pretty high floor considering their prices with those two guys on DraftKings. The other guy
actually looked at that line right now. That line lineup is only 0.06 behind our top overall lineup, and I suspect, you know, say the more money comes in on Kershaw, there's only the very smallest tweaks. One little value guy pops up at the top of the order somewhere, and I suspect that we'll land on a Kershaw-Porcello lineup there.
Yeah, the other guy the system kind of likes, I'm not going to spend too much time on him, is Tanner Roark. This is coming mostly bent off the money line. They are minus 170 going in. He's getting a lot of win expectation points here for kind of just the guy, like 7 Ks per 9, three walks. He's actually the kind of guy, the exact guy I don't want to really roster in cash, because I don't want it to be built. Because a lot of his points right here are one, I mean, Philly's not that great of a matchup, but it's getting built up a lot on just the money line for his price. And so that's pretty high variance, right? Because, like, you basically have one chance to get the win. It's one or nothing kind of thing. And I don't know. I'd much rather pay up for Porcello and Kershaw, let's say, than to try to just sweat out a Tanner Roark win against the Phillies.
I think so, too. I mean, he also has trouble staying on the mound because of the wildness and kind of the lack of overall K stuff. So, you know, like on FanDuel, heaven forbid you're considering him there, but he does struggle to get the quality start. Yeah, I'm not excited about Roark, but, you know, if in one of those lesser of two evils categories, like if Porcello wasn't around, I could see rostering him and just saying, you know, throwing your hands up and saying, hey, man, it's the DK2 pitcher slot. What are you going
to
do?
Last note about pitching before we move on. One guy I think people might look at or try to talk themselves into is Danny Duffy. He is a guy, I wrote about this in a kind of a longer piece about pitcher profiles and like big decrease guys in K per nine. Duffy was, I think, has the biggest overall decrease in his season over season K per nines. It's looking increasingly likely that last year was just a total outlier performance for him, and he's going to just settle back into just being just not a very good, well, he'll be a serviceable pitcher, but nowhere close to the K rate that he was putting up last year. So I would caution people against them. And then there's just a list of other just sort of dudes.
Well, the other guy in that same game, I think, that a lot of people are going to talk themselves into is Dylan Bundy. You know, so people really stacked Chris Archer against the Royals, and it worked out really, really well. I think a lot of people have rightfully kind of painted the Royals as an anemic offense this season, especially against right-handed pitching, you know, third worst WOBA in the league and a relatively high top 10 K rate as well. And that's true. You know, the Royals are a good matchup for an opposing pitcher. And Dylan Bundy does have this track record. But, I mean, you talked about guys on a dramatic K decrease this season. He's striking out three fewer Ks per nine than he did last year. And the overall pitcher profile suggests that maybe this is somewhat intentional. You know, he's walking fewer guys as well. The BABIP has gone down, presumably because more fly balls are happening. So while that's led to a lower ERA, that doesn't really look sustainable to me. And while I wouldn't hate it if people played him in a big tournament, I think Roto-Grinders reported he was the highest owned big tournament pitcher the last time he pitched.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And I just think that's incorrect to me. I mean, especially in an American League game, a guy who just doesn't strike anybody out, he almost, and whose price is inflated because of a lucky 2.1 ERA this year, it just strikes to me as like the exact guy I wouldn't want for a big tournament. Famous last words. But like, he would be very, very low on my list. Not only are you getting a guy who's probably just running hot, you're probably not even getting that much separation. So I'm just not interested.
All right, before we get to some stacks, hit us with a sponsor.
Yeah, let me talk about NoHalftime.com. So NoHalftime actually just released some really exciting news just this morning that said PGA is now available on their app. So the way, yeah, pretty cool stuff. So the way their PGA works is actually, it's probably the most straightforward way to do golf DFS, which is to say you get to choose one golfer and just say he's going to beat some other golfer. Then you put that challenge out into the world. If your golfer beats their golfer from a fantasy perspective, then you win. If theirs beats yours, then you lose. If no one accepts your challenge, then you move on. And the sweet thing about NoHalftime is this works across all sports. So we do it for MLB all the time. We've done it for football and basketball as well. Really slick app, really easy to use. You can either issue challenges or go look for challenges that are appealing to you today by downloading the NoHalftime.com app. You use promo code DFSR25. That'll get you a $25 bonus up to your first $25 deposit, and then you go from there. So yeah, check it out, man, because I'm excited to see this new PGA feature, and I'm sure Chris is pumped as well.
Yeah, Chris Terrell, who does all of our hockey, excuse me, all of, well, he does hockey too.
I just
all
call him PGA Chris. Stuff. We're just like kind of on a first name basis.
Now, Chris is great, and for the player championship this week,
Chris so Terrell to you. It'd be nice if you could just use
it. Okay, let's talk about some stacks. It seems like we're going to probably, no matter what, be at least paying some for pitching tonight. Not through the roof, so I think you'll be able to get some hitters in here, kind of in okay spots. But let's go through a couple stacks of teams that are in good spots today, and maybe ones that we can sort of hone in on. I like a couple, and I think that we're a little bit different here. But who do you like?
Well, I'm going to start you with a spicy one, okay? This is going to be a stack, pero spicy. And that's the Cardinals. So the Cardinals this season are not a name. You know, we haven't called their number a ton in the old stacks department. And that's because they're one of these teams that's kind of solid up and down the lineup, but without any real big feature name stars that are going to really put a beating on the other team. I mean, guys like Matt Carpenter, you know, really solid players, but they don't cut the mold of the traditional upside fantasy player, really. But the Cardinals this season are a top 10 team in terms of WOBA against right-handed pitching. And this year, it's a little bit of a throwback to last year, Doug. Mr. Eddie Butler, out of Coors now, pitching for the Cubs, getting his first start of the season. And I'm just really hoping that he's awful again because he was so bad last year. He managed. I mean, it's not an easy thing to do to pitch 64 innings in the major leagues and have a 7.1 ERA. Even harder is to manage 159 innings in the majors with a 6.5 ERA and get a call from one of the smartest organizations in baseball.
Well, that's so, actually the only thing that has me worried about.
I know,
right?
You're spooked. I figured you might be. I mean, he was really bad in Coors in particular, and I think that's probably led to a lot of his troubles. Yeah, it's like just some comically bad seasons right when he first got called up. Like, I just want to point this out, but his first year he got called up, he had a 1.7 Ks per nine. Like, just not great stuff. But Eddie Butler, 26 years old, I don't suspect that he's going to come out and be gangbusters or anything like that. Yeah, maybe better than usual, but I think in his first start, at least be a little rattled. Vegas likes the total on the Cardinals to some degree here, and they do have enough pop at the front of the order, like especially if Dexter Fowler's back, that I suspect that they can really put a beating on him. And I think people will be generally off it just because, again, the Cardinals, not one of those classic stack teams, but in the sum of the parts are greater than the whole thing. Yeah, it's the opposite. The whole is greater than the sum of the parts. I could see them just chasing Eddie Butler early and the Cubs just throwing the game away and being like, whatever, dudes, let's just pitch all of our worst pitchers and kind of give everyone that's good a night off.
Yeah, it's only when those smart teams do something that looks weird that I stop and kind of think about it. Like, if he had gone to almost any other team, I would be kind of with you. It's the only thing, it's just the Cubs that gives me a little bit pause on it, but I like it.
That's a famous gambling adage that I'm going to impart on you here as the old grizzled gambler of 15 years, is that when someone is doing something that looks really, really weird, it's probably dumb, but it might be genius. So you don't want to just write it off at first glance. So there could be some of that crazy like a fox stuff going on with the Cubs here. And maybe you don't want to go all in on it for your cash games or anything. But hey, man, it's just one night. So live a little. Why don't you?
The one team that is drawn to the top of our what we call this like a team value chart is Toronto is up there again tonight. They were kind of it was looking a little weird last night. And then they get the 3-run homer from Pierce and they were able to pile on some points or some points. Geez, some runs.
Only two guys on their team, by the way, paid their fantasy value. So you had to really have Pierce and Jesus, who was hitting cleanup for them last night. I can't even recall. But
Smoke.
Smoke and Pierce were the ones that scored all the fantasy points. But hey, man, you'll take it.
Well, they get Christian Bergman. So the Seattle's continuing its run of just like throwing out guys that feel like, how are these guys, like, how is this your rotation kind of thing? Like, I did see a headline the other day, and I didn't read the article, but this actually makes a lot more sense. And basically the headline was, man, Seattle's in real, real trouble, like, going forward. And this, and seeing the guys that they're throwing out in just in terms of on the mound, the kind of game after game, it's starting to strike me as probably what the context of that article was. Because, you know, last night they get Chase DeJong. He's brutal. Tonight they get Christian Bergman. He's a guy who has striked out less than 6 per 9. And this, he has actually a decent sample size too, over 150 innings of less than 6 strikeouts per 9, of a 5.71 ERA. I mean, xFIP's a little bit lower. He stinks. The only problem here is sort of like what you mentioned is Toronto. Toronto's not exactly gangbusters either, right? Like, they're going to hit Pilar and Carrera, I suppose, 1-2. Bautista's really struggled this year. Smoke and Pierce. I suspect you just see kind of the same lineup as they had last night. And that is a lineup that has underperformed this year. And
they're probably performed to their ability level, which is to say they're just bad.
So. Right. But they're all coming very cheap against it. So you're getting a very cheap guys against a very bad arm. And I think that especially if you're just trying to round out some of your lineups, if you're paying up for guys like Kershaw and Porcello, let's say, having these guys in your lineup coming mostly under 3,000 or like right in that 3,000 range on FanDuel, I do like the spot. And I fully admit that I do not think the Blue Jays are any kind of a great team or anything. They're just a team that, facing a bad pitcher in a pretty good park, who have all had their prices severely reduced because they've been spent the better part of the season being pretty bad. So I'm not exactly over the moon excited about it, but at the same time, I wouldn't feel too terrible rostering, you know, Bautista and Pearson, maybe Carrera, who came pretty cheap on DraftKings. So guys like that, again, I think that the floor is okay without being crazy, crazy excited. Cardinals, Blue Jays, any other teams that we can take a look at here before we get out of here?
Yeah, I think some more mainstream stack tonight might be the Rangers. You know, we stacked them last night, of course, and it didn't exactly work out, but they get another lease on life here tonight against Jesse Hahn. Hahn this season, 2.7 ERA, so on the surface, it might look a little scary for you. He's not actually as good as that ERA would suggest. He's kind of one of these classic pitch around the plate kind of guys who doesn't really strike many people out. Actually is a little bit wild, so I take back what I said about pitching around the plate. But running hot on the BABIP this season. He had been a 320 BABIP guy in his prior two seasons before coming out this year and having the 270 BABIP. So, Jesse Hahn, not a guy I'm super excited about. Some of his prior success came mostly due to pitching in San Diego. You get him out of there, and he's been very, very average at best. And then you throw in the even worse park in Texas, which, you know, is sort of piling on at this point. The difference between Texas and Oakland, his home park, is very, very dramatic. So I think you get him on the road. Again, Texas let us down last night, but I think it's another place you can look just in terms of guys that are a little bit underpriced value, especially against right-handed pitching. So maybe get Odor in there. You know, you just kind of sprinkle in pieces here and there. Maybe don't go all in for your cash games, but definitely a team to look at.
You know, and we glossed over it because I was kind of just only thinking about one side of the Coors game, but the Dodger side of Coors tonight, actually, they have the highest implied run total of any team by about 10 or 12% or something like that.
Yeah, pretty juicy.
Right. And if they were to go with the same lineup they went last night where they hit Peterson leadoff, he would be at 3,600 on FanDuel. He'd be a guy that would be a pretty easy cash game play just to start. They hit Bellinger cleanup. I think they would do that again. Those two guys are still coming like in the high 3,000s range. And if that's just totally fine territory to pay for them. So the Dodgers probably do lead the just raw points stacks. Probably should have just mentioned that at the beginning. But if they hit the same exact lineup as last night, then Peterson and Bellinger are the two guys that kind of stand out for me there. Another team that the system really likes, the Diamondbacks against Glasnow. The Glasnow, he's a prospect, and he's shown K stuff through his career. But man, this guy walks the entire ballpark. Like, he is so wild. And it's actually, now we're getting into a fair amount of innings, of major league innings, where it's not really solving itself. So he's 50 innings into his career right now. He is walking 5.72 guys per nine. I can't really remember too many other guys with this high of a walk rate over this period of time. I mean, I'm sure they've done it, but this is epically wild for a guy. Now, I get he has stuff and he can strike guys out. Like, he's striking out more than a batter per nine, but man, the best way to pile up runs is to just get your guys on base against a guy like this, and then just, you know, wait for a home run. Diamondbacks strike me as a great team in that kind of scenario tonight, with guys like Peralta and Lamb for starters hitting the better side of their platoons. Goldschmidt, he's better against lefties, but it's not a guy that you necessarily need to avoid. So really like the Diamondbacks here. I'm ready and prepared for the idea when Glasnow maybe does finally put it together and just like turns in a great start. It just kind of isn't happening just with the Wildness. So do like the Diamondbacks. So
sure. I've got another one for you before you run out of here. And that's the Washington Nationals. I think, you know, a lot of them have become expensive because they've had so much success this season, but it's kind of interesting. Their total actually isn't through the roof, but I actually look at that as a good thing tonight, because if I'm going to really stack them, I'm probably going to do it to try to get separation from the field. Nick Pivetta, we've talked about him very briefly on the show before, but he's a real guy. He's not one of these guys coming up that's just a total crime against humanity like Christian Bergman, or, you know, and I'm sorry, Christian Bergman's mom. I know Mother's Day's coming up, but, you know, come on. Some guys are major league quality pitchers.
My friend Bake, who was like, you know, he was a great pitcher in high school and great pitcher in college, and then
he went to the minors, right?
He was in the minors for a little bit. He absolutely hates when we call pitchers bad, because, you know, he like didn't get past the low levels of the minors, but mostly because of injury, actually.
Well, but Bake's lucky that he never made it to the majors, because I'm sure we'd be slamming him.
Well, he absolutely just drives him absolutely insane whenever we call pitchers bad. He's like, because he'll just g-chat me or text me, and it's like, these guys could strike you out every single time. I'm like, I get it, buddy, it's all relative.
That's awesome, dude. And if they were users of our projection system, and they had a bad couple months, they could say these DFSR guys are bad, right? Because they were not saying they're worse than me. They're saying they're worse relative to their professional level peers. And that's what I'm saying about these guys. So I could say all that. That would be also very dry and kind of boring. So instead, I'll just say horrible. And if you aren't better than those guys, I don't know what you're doing with your life.
I forget who we're talking about. You're talking about Pivetta. Yeah.
Pivetta. No, Pivetta's good, though. Unlike the really, really bad pitchers, the ones who don't even make the majors. just kidding. No, Pivetta's actually good. But he's still very young and still can get blown up. I mean, he hasn't had great major league success thus far. And the Nats just have a lot of real guys, and especially a lot of bruising left-handed bats. And so, say you go a little bit cheaper on pitching, like you could really do some all-in sort of things here, where you go McCullers in the pitcher's slot, that frees up some cash to stack some Nationals against Pivetta. I think there's something going there. So that's what I'm going to kind of be tinkering with when we get off the pod today.
Yeah, I love it. There's a lot of different ways to go tonight. This is a great night for baseball. I like the names we're seeing already kind of near the top for cash games. And I think there are enough pivots that give you pretty high upside and pretty high EV just going in. So yeah, get onto a night of baseball. And if you have not signed up for our system, dfsr.com/MLB will get you a free 3-day trial. So that'll take you through the weekend. And then it's just $30 a month. After that, I think you'll be happy with the service. Buddy, have a great weekend working and doing all the parenting, and I'll talk to you again next week.
Can't wait, man. Birth the Play. Come check it out in Dover tonight. Bye.